This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week, we're on episode 56, where we are covering the Turpin family.
And just a little bit about it. The Turpin family was a case of severe child abuse, where parents David and Louise abused and held their 13 children captive, even when they became adults, until one of their daughters had enough and escaped to save her siblings.
Yeah, this case is very interesting, very crazy, and one we've been talking about doing for a while.
Yeah, and it happened, well, it was discovered in 2018, and it's like, you know that things like this still happen, but it's just crazy to be like, wow, it was just 2 years ago. And
yeah, especially to the extent that yes. This family went to, because there's just so many children and like so many things happening to them.
Yeah, like imagine being able to control 13 kids until they're adults.
Yeah, like, till they're like almost 30, basically, yeah, as we'll discover.
Keep them captive.
Yeah, it is a bit of a crazy one. But just as a heads up to our listeners as well, this is the episode that we had planned to release next week. So it is
last week.
Yes, that is true. My brain is mush. It is the episode that we planned to release last week. So we might make some references that like it happened recently or something like that. Like the whole eruption in America, I would say, like it reached its boiling point over mm-hmm. the weekend of like May 31st, I would say, which is right when we recorded this. So we're probably a little off in some of it, or we just are saying things that don't make sense. So
it's fine.
I'll try and edit it all out so it makes it all flow, but just as a heads up.
But we do want to thank you guys. We did not receive any sort of negative comments or backlash for not posting an episode last week.
Yeah.
And we think that's great. And
yeah, we just received thank you. Positive comments. And as of now, Breonna Taylor's case has been reopened, mm-hmm. which is really awesome. There have been no arrests made at the time that we are recording this, which is the 8th. As of now, that has at least been reopened, which is a nice step. Yep. And the Minneapolis police said, defund the police.
Yep.
So lots of crazy things are happening in our world.
Yeah, the world is insane right now, but yes. We're getting in a step in the right direction.
Yeah, we are. And we're going to continue to educate ourselves offline and online, and it's going to be great. I hope that everyone continues to like educate themselves, not just for this movement, but just like becomes more self-aware of the world in general and like starts to just better the world. I hope 2020 is finally our year, guys.
Right?
Manifesting it. I've never manifested anything in my life.
You get one in your lifetime and this is it. So Morgan, yes. What is your binge this week?
My binge this week is Run the Jewels' new album.
Nice.
Yeah, they came out with it a little bit earlier. It got released on the 3rd, I believe, and it's Run the Jewels 4. And I've been listening to them just to like humble brag since they released Run the Jewels 2. And I've seen them in concert and they're super, super great. And it's a very timely album is the word I'm looking for. It's a very timely album, and I also just like Run the Jewels, so yeah. I was just happy to get another album from them. It's a little shorter than usual. It's only 39 minutes, which is kind of sad, so It goes by really fast, but it's great. There's some great track titles on there. Like my favorite song title on the album is Holy Calamafuck, along with just they always have great like song titles. Mm-hmm. It's just great. Yeah. They have a few words for the firing squad. Like they're pretty cool, like longer titles than most songs have and stuff. That's a weird reason to like a band. That's I'm going to stop talking now. But yeah, I just like them. I still think Run the Jewels 3 is my favorite album, but it's always nice to get a new album from one of your favorite artists.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
So, this week, again, I'm binging, like, those little short, like, 10-minute videos that you can find on YouTube.
Yeah.
But this time, it is of Say Yes to the Dress videos.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're great because there's lots of drama and shit.
Yeah.
But the reason why I have been binging them is because...
You smug motherfucker. That smug face.
Is because 2 weeks ago, I got engaged.
Yeah, Sarah's motherfucking engaged, y'all.
I'm being an adult. Yay.
Is that what being an adult is?
I don't think so.
But that's cool. Are you going to tell us more about your... Nope, you got awkward?
I did get awkward. Yeah, I got engaged. It happened on the beach at Sharky's in Venice. And all of my fiance's family was there. My dad was there. There was a lot of people, but it was nice. It was funny, though, because I'm a very quiet and awkward person.
Yeah.
Especially in a group of people. And so when he asked me, I like quietly said yes.
Yeah.
And then... his best friend Tyler was there and he was just screamed like, what did you say? And I was like, I said yes, okay.
Leave me alone,
right?
My favorite thing is that Sarah was like, there was a ton of people there and they were all looking at me, and I'm like, girl, that is what a wedding is. That's the whole point of a wedding, is to look at you.
Like, I'm so awkward that after it happened, we all went back to do like a group shot.
Yeah.
Of liquor. And
not a group photo.
Yeah. A group shot of liquor. And I like went to take it and just spilt it all down my shirt.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is why I don't like people looking at me, because I know at my wedding, I'm just going to spill shit on my dress.
You're going to have to wear a bib to your own wedding.
Honestly, great idea.
That should be a thing. Like, really cute wedding bibs.
What is that spray that you can spray on clothes so that way, like, food and sauce just rolls off of them?
I hate that.
Just do it to my whole dress.
I think it would get stuck in, like, if you got any type of rhinestones or lace. I don't think it helps with, like, nice texture, you know?
You're 100% right. But I thought it was a good idea.
All right. Congratulations to our very own Sarah Maris here.
Thank you.
I don't think I've ever used your nickname on the podcast.
You haven't.
It's a stupid nickname, and I don't know why I call her Sarah Maris, but I have for years.
It's fine.
And your name is Sarah Maris. But let's just get into today's episode, past selves.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do this thing. So, a little bit about David and Louise Turpin. David Turpin was born on October 17th, 1961, to parents James and Betty. He graduated from Princeton High School in West Virginia in 1979, and the yearbook listed him as the treasurer of the Bible Club, co-captain of the chess club, a member of the science club, and a member of the a cappella choir. Mike Gilbert, who knew David in high school, described him as kind of nerdy and kind of a homebody. He graduated from Virginia Tech and was described as a senior electrical engineer major and as a member of the Electrical and Computer Engineering Honor Society, Eta Kappa Nu. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm so bad at computers.
Yeah, he's smart as fuck.
Yeah. After graduating, he became a computer engineer and worked as an engineer for both Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, who are two of the biggest aerospace and defense companies in the world, as well as General Dynamics, which is another aerospace and defense company.
So, my uncle, who was also crazy, used to work for Lockheed Martin and those places like that. Like, he was like, I could shoot a missile into your chimney if I wanted to.
Very
and
cool.
He was also very crazy, so it might just be this company that just drives people insane.
It could be. Maybe they're like learning secrets that are driving them insane.
Ooh.
Could be.
Yeah, they're getting brainwashed to unlearn the secrets when they retire.
Yeah, ooh. We figured it out. We're going to get our brains wiped next.
Oh, no.
And he retired from work in 2012. Louise Turpin was born Louise Robinette on May 24th, 1968, to Wayne and Phyllis Robinette. Her father was a church pastor, and she had at least two siblings, Elizabeth and Teresa.
I did also learn that she has a half-brother as well, but there really isn't anything about him.
Okay, yeah.
That happens.
They had an unhappy home growing up because their parents would fight constantly, and Louise was also bullied during school. During their childhood, the three sisters, along with a cousin, Patricia, Patricia Andreasen, were sexually abused as children. Their mother, Phyllis, would allow their maternal grandfather, John Taylor, to sexually abuse them in exchange for cash. And this man was a recipient of two Purple Hearts, the Silver Star, five Bronze Stars, and a Good Conduct Medal.
Turns out he wasn't such a great man.
Yeah, goes to show that
right?
Those accomplishments don't always mean the most. Teresa later recalled, "He would slip money into my hand as he molested me and would breathe onto my neck to be quiet. We begged our mother not to take us to him, but she would simply say, 'I have to clothe and feed you.'"
There are other ways.
That, yeah, it's this is just awful. And then they turn into awful people, too, because they don't know how to get out of the cycle of abuse. And it's just like a whole thing.
Exactly.
Teresa also remembers that Louise being abused was often the worst. But she recalls that she was a good girl who never smoked, drank, or did drugs in her childhood. And Louise also attended Princeton High School until 1985. As an adult, she became an alcoholic, obsessed with witchcraft, satanic rituals, snakes, and Ouija boards, and was consumed by gambling and sex. Honestly, most of those things sound like millennials, like what they strive for nowadays.
Right? So, Louise and David met when David was 17 and Louise was 10. He's 7 years older.
Which isn't a big deal until you're 17 and 10 years old and yes. That's when you meet.
Yes.
That's the issue. When you're like over the age of 21, 7 years isn't like a huge gap. But under the age of 21, it's a bit of a big gap.
Yeah. So when David was 24 and Louise was 16, David went to Princeton High School and the school allowed him to check her out for the day. Like if he was a parent.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Louise's sister, Teresa, who spoke out a lot. So we have a lot of quotes from her.
Yeah.
Said, "My mom allowed Louise to date David secretly because she loved him and he was from a Christian family and she trusted Louise. But she was doing it behind my dad's back. He wasn't aware that they were dating. And then one day, David went into the high school and they let him sign Louise out of the school and they ran away. He had his car and they drove." So, the couple had made it all the way to Texas in order to elope before turning around and heading back to West Virginia due to Louise's parents' requests.
Yeah, but now they're already married.
Yeah. So her father, Wayne, was angry that the two went away to elope. And he accepted that they were going to get married, but he wanted them to, like, come back and have a proper Christian ceremony.
Right.
And so they did. They came back to do the proper ceremony and were married in Princeton, West Virginia, in 1984. And they had an intimate wedding at a very small church with just the two families present.
Okay.
After they were married, the two went back to Texas to start their lives together. The Turpins rented a postal box in Burleson, Texas, from 1986 to 2003. They lived in a double-wide trailer, and when the kids were in school, the children would be bullied for coming to class not bathed and wearing the same clothes days in a row. They lived in Fort Worth until 1999, and then moved to Rio Vista until 2010. And their house was in a semi-rural neighborhood, and they had a large yard with some privacy. But after the family moved out of the house, neighbors visited the abandoned property and found feces throughout the house, beds with ropes tied to them, several dead cats and dogs in a trailer, and large piles of garbage throughout the property. And the neighbors didn't report any of their findings to the authorities.
Yeah, it's like, on one hand, do you not want to tell them because you're being nosy?
Yeah, but it's like,
I think after you see beds with ropes tied to them is the issue.
And like, we're in the whole see something, say something, like, period of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's like, even call the non-emergency number, call CPS, call, like, I know that they had kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
So this whole time that they're in Texas.
Yeah.
They're just popping out babies. They're constantly having one kid after the other.
They're duggering it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And according to David's parents, the couple kept having children, quote, because God called on them to do so.
Just as a side note.
Yeah.
God doesn't want anybody to have that many kids.
No.
He just doesn't.
We already have too many people on this planet.
So many.
And speaking of the Duggars, they also did that thing where all of their children's names started with the letter J.
Yeah.
And also, all of their children were forced to dress in, like, a uniform-like style. They were all in the same, like, style or pattern of clothing.
Yeah.
So it just looked creepy as fuck.
It's very, like, cultish to look at the photos of, because they have group photos of them, like, at weddings and stuff, at their weddings. Mm-hmm. And all of the girls are wearing the exact same dress, and it's fucking creepy.
It is.
Yeah.
So Luis's sister said that the couple participated in swinging and explored different religions. The couples were adherents to the Quiverful movement and Pentecostalism.
In 2010, the family moved to Murrieta, California, and then in 2014 moved again to Paris, California, which is 70 miles southeast of Los Angeles. In 2011, David actually filed for bankruptcy due to racking up $240,000 in credit card debt.
That is so much money in credit card. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, you just have to continuously open credit cards and just do it.
Insane. I tried to apply for a credit card and they denied me. Like, how does this guy just keep getting more and more?
Right? Gotta get that credit. The bankruptcy documents listed his income as an engineer at Northrop Grumman at $140,000 per year. He was also listed as the principal of the Sandcastle Day School, which he operated out of his home for his children. Louise's occupation on the documents was listed as a homemaker, which also functioned for the school. At the house in California, the yards were always unkempt with overgrown weeds, which caused a code violation to the house, which we deal actively in.
Exactly.
And neighbors said that they would occasionally see the children outside, but they wouldn't speak. They would skip instead of walking and appeared malnourished and pale. But inside of the house, they couldn't imagine the conditions that the Turpin children were living in. By 2015, the couple had 13 children, 10 girls and 3 boys, with some being legal adults who were forced and conditioned to stay with the family. The youngest child was born when Louise was 47 years old. That's crazy. They mostly lived in locked rooms, deprived of toys, games, schooling, and most outside contact.
Yeah, like when the dad said that he ran the school, they didn't actually get any schooling.
No, they didn't get any schooling at all, which we'll learn later on. But it's ridiculous.
It is.
Also, like, the difference with the Duggars is they had this many kids and, like, took care of them.
Yes.
Why are you having so many kids if you don't know how to physically take care of them, so instead you chain them to a bed so you don't have to?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's so you don't have to take care of them.
Yeah. And they're like, we'll learn, feeding them once a day.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you don't have enough money to do it, obviously you don't, because you had to file for fucking bankruptcy.
Yeah. Like, and in the beginning, I don't even think it was the money. I think it's just pure, like, Louise. I don't think Louise is, like, mentally there enough to be able to take care of children.
Yeah.
And, like, she was also conditioned from 10 years old to be with this man, David.
Yeah.
You know, realistically, she was also conditioned. Like, she's still a bad person, but she was probably conditioned just like the children were, and she thought it was totally okay.
Yeah.
So the family did go on 3 trips, once to Disneyland and twice to Las Vegas, for David and Louise to renew their vows with an Elvis impersonator.
They loved them their Elvis.
They did. They loved a good Vegas wedding.
I just wanted, real quickly, because we don't talk about it in here, if you don't look at our pictures that we post about this on Instagram or anything.
Oh, yeah.
I just need y'all to take a second and look up David Turpin's haircut.
Oh, yeah. It's a real choice that was made.
It's like an extra, extra long bowl cut.
It's like it's a combination between a bowl cut and a mullet. It all is. At the same time. It's very impressive, honestly.
It is. It's insane.
It's very cool. The children were also allowed to go out on Halloween, as David and realized that it would be weird and neighbors would notice if their kids were stuck inside on Halloween. So they're actively, like, they know they're doing something wrong.
Yes.
They act later like they don't know, but they do. The parents also took pictures during these rare outings and made the impression on social media to their relatives that they were just one big happy family. The house was never cleaned, and there was piles of trash, feces, dirty diapers, and food all over the house, which also caused rats to infest the house.
Yeah, I put, like, think an episode of Hoarders with 15 people living in one house.
Yeah, I don't remember if I put it in or not, but one of the girls later describes that the house was so filthy that she can't breathe.
Yeah.
When she's sleeping. That's disgusting.
Yeah, like, how are you supposed... You're not supposed to live like that.
No, but,
like,
you're not. And they were only allowed to bathe once a year.
Yeah, that is insane.
That, like, just... I don't know. And they were also frequently refused use of the bathroom, which is what resulted in the feces-covered floor, because they just weren't allowed to use the bathroom. When they were able to use the bathroom, they were rarely allowed to wash their hands, and if they washed their hands above the wrist, it was considered to be playing in the water, and they were punished.
It's just unbelievable.
It's just like... This set of restrictions is incredibly strict to maintain. There's no way you could maintain it.
Exactly. You have to watch every time someone used the fucking bathroom. Yeah. Like,
it's insane. They were also deprived of food in the house. The children received no breakfast, and lunch and dinner were combined into one meal, usually consisting of peanut butter or bologna sandwiches, frozen burritos, and chips. And obviously, this caused the children to be severely malnourished and underweight.
Yeah, like, how many fruits and vegetables are you getting in that peanut butter sandwich
guy? Yeah. And one of the daughters said that she started refusing the peanut butter sandwiches because they would make her gag and she would start to throw up.
I feel that. So, there was a very strict and vicious system of punishment for any sort of disobedience in the house. Physical hitting was the first level of punishment, followed by hitting with a paddle, an oar, and then a metal-tipped tent pole.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. If this didn't work, the children were put into cages. The first cage was 35 square feet, so it was pretty good size.
Yeah.
But it just had an opening for food to pass through. And if that didn't work, the parents would then use a dog kennel. One of the girls stated when she was about 15, Louise choked her after catching her watch watching a Justin Bieber music video on a cell phone that she had borrowed from one of her older sisters. While choking her, her mother said, "You want to die and go to hell?"
They love Elvis, the king of gyrating and shaking his hips.
But Justin Bieber.
Okay.
So the children would also be tied to their bed using ropes. And when the children figured out how to get out of the ropes eventually, David and Louise started using larger and larger chains and shackles.
Yeah.
The children were also forced to march around the two-story home for hours upon hours at night. And apart from being hit, they had their hair pulled, were thrown across rooms, and on some occasions were thrown down the stairs.
Yeah.
And, like, some of the neighbors later reported, like, there was one guy who said he comes home late at, like, 3 a.m. from work, mm-hmm. and he would see the children marching in circles upstairs. And, again, it's like, why don't you do something?
Yeah, because, like, that's literal conditioning behavior that cults use to mm-hmm. make people fall in line to their cult.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know, if I saw a bunch of kids marching around at 3 a.m., I think that I would probably call the police eventually, you
like
know?
Maybe if it happened once, it's like, they're
fucking weird.
Yeah, whatever. But, like, multiple times.
And I think the issue is, like, people are weird, and it's not a crime to be weird, but some weird people are scary and bad, so, like, just because someone's weird, if you get a bad feeling, just maybe do something about it.
Yeah. One of the daughters said that when she was 12, her father, David, pulled down her pants, put her on his lap, and tried to kiss her on the lips. Which, obviously, later he denied. But.
Right.
And in another instance, one of the daughters was forced to stand in a corner of the bathroom after being caught playing with a Barbie doll.
After Why have them if they can't play with them?
That's what I don't get.
Sorry, that just like made me real mad.
And after 2 hours of standing in the corner, the malnourished girl fainted and fractured her jaw when falling to the ground.
Yeah.
When one of her sisters tried telling Louise about the girl's condition, Louise reprimanded her for interrupting a phone call. Eventually, once they made it to a hospital, Louise made her daughter tell the doctors that she injured herself after slipping on water.
Yeah.
One of the daughters would take photos when her siblings were abused as evidence in a plan to escape.
Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. What a, like, a great plan, truly.
Yes. One of the photos showed one of the girls chained up tightly around her torso, kneeling on a filthy mattress thrown on the floor in front of a pair of bunk beds. Another photo showed a different girl chained to a bedpost sitting on the floor with her wrists tightly cuffed. After the rescue, some of the children claimed that they were chained up on and off for roughly 6.5 years.
That's insane.
The oldest son actually attended classes at the local community college, but Louise would wait outside of his classroom for him and immediately take him home once class was done.
Yeah.
So, like, he probably got made fun of.
Oh, probably.
And his classmates described him as shy, frail, and visibly hungry.
Yeah. If your classmates are describing you as visibly hungry,
there's an issue.
You're very malnourished.
There was also a time where David and Louise moved out of their house.
Yeah.
And lived in an apartment nearby for 3 years, forcing the children to survive on their own. So the older children acted as the parents, changing the diapers and also dishing out severe punishments as they were conditioned as this was the right thing to do.
Yeah, if that's all you've ever known and you don't get to go to school and you don't get to have interactions with other people, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
So at one point, the oldest daughter tried to escape the squalor conditions. But without any education or documentation, like a driver's license, She realized that she would not be able to get a job or care for herself and ultimately called her mother to pick her up and take her back home. Another time, the kids devised a plan to go to Vegas because this was one of the only happy memories that they ever had as a family together. So they called a taxi company and asked how much it would cost to get them there. When the company asked, "Where in Vegas do you want to go and where are you from?" the children decided against it. They were worried that whoever they called would tell their parents and that they would get in big trouble. But eventually, the children, tired of living a life of torture, had been planning an escape for 2 years. On January 14th, 2018, three of the children, 22-year-old Jonathan, 14-year-old Joanna, and 12-year-old Jalissa, were shackled to their bed and crying out in fear and pain. This is when 17-year-old Jordan decided that she had enough and it was time to escape. This was just days before the family was planning on moving to Oklahoma. An attorney, Kevin Beecham, who worked on this case a lot, says that there was also a plan that once they got to Oklahoma, all of the children would be chained up and would no longer be allowed to leave their chains for much at all. Because right now it's being used as a punishment, mm-hmm. but that was just how they were going to live eventually. And he worked closely with all of the siblings during this case and said that at least five of the other siblings also knew of the morning escape plan, and some of the kids had overheard David and Louise discussing their plans for Oklahoma. Around 6 a.m., Jordan and her 13-year-old sister, Jalinda, escaped the house through a window. And before leaving, one of the girls, it's not indicated which, but I believe it's Jordan, faked a little lump in her bed to make sure it looked like she was still sleeping there before she left. But Jalinda shortly returned out of fear. Jordan, however, took her mother's cell phone, which had been deactivated, and continued to make her way to the street. Although the cell phone had been deactivated, she was able to call 911. All in all, the 911 call is 20 minutes long, as Jordan describes the conditions that she's living in. But we do want to include some of the clips at the beginning just because I think it gives you an idea, like, the way that she speaks, because mm-hmm. she sounds like a five-year-old.
Yeah, and she's 17.
So I think it'll just help what we talk about later as well to include some of the clips. And they're not any, like, scary 911 clips because I know a lot of people don't like those. They're just like a little girl talking, mm-hmm. essentially.
What's your name?
Jordan Turpin. Okay, I live in a family of 15 people, and my parents are abusing, they abuse us, and my two little sisters right now are chained up.
And how many of your siblings are tied up?
Two of my sisters, one of my brothers.
How are they tied up, with rope or with what?
With chains. They're chained up to their bed.
She also told the dispatcher that she hadn't bathed in nearly a year, and like I said earlier, that sometimes she would wake up and couldn't breathe because of how dirty the house is. She also said that she hadn't seen a doctor in 5 years and had never been to a dentist in her life. The police met her, and she showed the officers photos of the conditions in the home from the phone that she had taken.
Yeah, and like, she couldn't tell the dispatcher where she was located because she didn't yeah. know the streets and stuff. But the police, like, met with her outside of her home on the street and then went with her back.
Mm-hmm.
So this led the Riverside County Sheriff's Department to immediately descend on the house where they found the 12 of their siblings. One of the daughters said that she knew her sister had contacted police when she heard a knock at the door and saw flashing lights. She said she was finally going to be free.
That's so sad.
Mm-hmm. When the police arrived, they learned that the children had a very small sense of the outside world. Some children didn't know what day or month or year it was. They didn't know what street they lived on, what medicine was, and some of the children didn't even know what the police were.
That's horrifying, truly, to think about. That, right? Like, the fact that some of them didn't know what a month was,
mm-hmm.
like, that's crazy to me.
The 22-year-old boy, Jonathan, was still shackled to the bed with chains when they arrived, but the police suspected that Joanna and Jaleesa had been shackled just prior to their entry to the house.
Because of what Jordan had told them, yeah.
The officers at the scene described the siblings as having a malnourished and dirty appearance, and they all looked to be younger than their actual ages. In fact, they were so malnourished that the eldest daughter, who was 29 years old, weighed only 82 pounds when they were discovered.
Yeah, that's very small for an almost 30-year-old woman.
And the 11-year-old, who they believed had been shackled to the bed, her arms were the size of an infant's arms.
Yeah.
Like, that's so...
It's just so small and so frail.
And initially, the police believed all of the children to be minors, but later discovered that their ages range from 2 to 29.
Yeah.
And 7 of the 13 siblings were actual legal adults when they were found.
It's... Whew!
Yeah. The remaining 6 minors were sent to Riverside Medical Center in the pediatrics unit for treatment, and the adult siblings were sent to the Corona Medical Center. The staff at Corona said that the adults were small and malnourished, but stable and relieved to be there, and they were also very friendly.
Yeah.
The 7 siblings stayed at the medical center until March 2018, and the remaining siblings were in 2 foster homes. When the police raided the home, Louise acted genuinely surprised that they were there.
And this is kind of why I think that the conditioning thing applies to Louise as well. Because to a certain extent, I feel like she genuinely didn't know, like, that isn't how everyone raised their kids.
Yeah.
Because she was also abused growing up and stuff. And then she was conditioned by this man who is 7 years older than her at the age of 10. You know?
Yeah.
Like, when they said that she was genuinely shocked, I was like, she probably doesn't fucking know she's doing anything wrong. Like, it's crazy.
Neither David or Luis were able to give the police a logical reason as to why their children were restrained in this manner.
Which is just so funny.
Mm-hmm. And so they were both arrested on suspicion of child endangerment and torture.
David and Louise were taken to the Riverside County Jail, where they were set on a $9 to $12 million bail each. The police went back to home on January 17th to search the property and took away bags of evidence. They found hundreds of journals written by the children about their experiences over the previous years. Can you imagine how heartbreaking it would be to read through those? Because you know that they had to read through those for the trial, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Turpins were charged with 12 counts of torture, 12 counts of false imprisonment, 7 counts of abuse of a dependent adult, and 6 counts of child abuse. And David also got a charge of a lewd act on a child under 14 years old. They pleaded not guilty to these charges, and after they were read, District Attorney Mike Hestron said, "The abuse and severe neglect intensified over time and intensified as they moved to California," like in regards to them saying they were not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, because they have 13 children, but they're only getting 12 counts of torture, they don't think that, like, the 2-year-old was being abused in the same manner yet, because she just wasn't old enough, essentially. On January 24th, a brief hearing was held to see if a restraining order could be placed on the Turpin parents forbidding contact with their children for 3 years. The judge accepted this request, and the defendants agreed to the restrictions. Before the trial, more charges were brought against the couple, which I love. And David was charged with 8 counts of perjury in relation to affidavits he filed with the California Department of Education between 2010 and 2017. These stated that the children were receiving a full-time education in a private day school.
Yeah, because the 17-year-old girl said she had about a first-grade education. And then one of the boys, I think it was the 22-year-old boy, said that he had a formal third grade education.
Yeah.
But it probably maxed out. He could do 10th grade stuff.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Like, yeah.
But then another kid was going to community college. So, like, it seemed like they favored some kids over the others.
Right. Yeah. Which tends to happen in situations like this, which is horrible. The prosecution also brought forward that the children were so malnourished that two of the daughters would never be able to have children and suffered from psychosocial dwarfism, a growth disorder caused by severe stress. The defense wanted to bring confusion to the court by saying that some of the children had access to social media, with one having a secret YouTube account and another making a friend through Twitter, which I actually was watching a video of this girl's YouTube account. Mm-hmm. It's Jordan who has it. And the comments on it were truly disgusting. Really? They were all just like, you have a YouTube account, but you couldn't find help for you and your siblings. And it's like,
she did.
She did, ultimately. And like, she... You can't blame children for being victims of abuse. Like, you just can't. Yeah. They don't know any better. And yeah, it's crazy that a 29-year-old woman was still living with her parents and being chained to her fucking bed. But if that's all she knew, that's all she knew. Like,
yeah, that's called conditioning. Just like when we did the case with Colleen Stan.
Yeah.
Like, she was conditioned to love this guy. And even though he let her go, she came back for a little bit, and the same with the abducted in plain sight girl.
Yeah, it just, that's what conditioning does, and that's what it's meant to do, and I think it's really irresponsible to blame literal children for their, like, victimhood.
Yeah, so. And a lot of, like, her YouTube account was her singing about, like, her wanting to be free and be out of the house, like, and what her struggles that she's going through.
Yeah.
So, on June 21st, Superior Court Judge Bernard Schwartz ruled that the Turpins would go on trial for child abuse, false imprisonment, and torture of their children. All in all, the couple faced 50 charges. And although the defense attorneys tried to dismiss most of the charges, the judge only dropped one charge, which was the child endangerment involving the two-year-old because of the lack of evidence that she had been abused.
I love that judge. He was like, sure, I'll take away charges. One, bitch.
Yep. So before the actual trial began, there were many attempts to continue pushing back the date, mostly from the defense attorney considering new motions in the case.
As we see constantly.
Yeah. The defense wanted to seek mental health treatment for Louise, who had been diagnosed with histrionic personality disorder since her arrest. If the request had been granted for this, she could have been in treatment for up to 2 years, and all of the charges against her would have been dropped.
Yeah.
But the judge denies this request.
Yeah.
After much more back and forth, as always, the judge announced in November of 2018 that the trial would officially begin on the next September 3rd of 2019. This was because it was believed that the defense was trying to get a change of venue for the trial since it was so publicized.
Much like in the Casey Anthony case. Mm-hmm.
But on February 22nd, 2019, at a trial readiness conference, David and Louise both changed their pleas to guilty to one count of torture, 3 counts of willful child cruelty, 4 counts of false imprisonment, and 6 counts of cruelty to an adult dependent. And this plea ensured that they admitted guilt to at least one crime per child.
Yeah, which I'm thankful they made them do at least that. That's like the bare minimum.
Yeah. Riverside County District Attorney Mike Hestrin said, "This is among the worst, most aggravated child abuse cases that I had ever seen or been involved in my career as a prosecutor. Part of what went into the decision making in this agreement and this sentence is that the victims in this case would ultimately not have to testify."
Yeah.
And the seven adult children also said that they were relieved that they wouldn't have to testify during a trial.
Yeah, they already, I'm sure, relive their trauma every day. They mm-hmm. don't need to go in court to do the same thing. So on April 19th, their sentencing trial was held. At this trial, some of the children spoke out in front of the court for the first time.
And it was their decision to speak out. They weren't forced to, like they would have been at a trial.
They were basically just making, like, victim statements.
Yes.
Yeah. One daughter, and these are very sad, but just, like, very nice at the same time. So bear mm-hmm. with us because they're kind of sad. One daughter said, "Now I'm taking my life back. I'm a fighter. I'm strong, and I'm shooting through life like a rocket. I'm in college now and living independently. I love hanging out with my friends, and life is great. I believe everything happens for a reason. Life may have been bad, but it made me strong. I fought to become the person I am. I saw my dad change my mom. They almost changed me, but I realized what was happening." And while she was reading this statement, her mother can be, like, seen in the corner crying. I don't know that David cried during any of his children reading statements.
I'm not sure.
But I believe I saw him crying in court, and I think it was like during sentencing or something. Mm. It was only for himself. It was not for his children. Let's be clear.
Of course.
And their son, 27-year-old Joshua, said, "I cannot describe in words what we went through growing up. Sometimes I still have nightmares of things that have happened, such as my siblings being chained up or getting beaten. But that is the past, and this is now. I love my parents and have forgiven them for a lot of the things they did to us. Since January, I have learned so much and become very independent. In June of last year, I learned how to ride a bike, and ever since then, I've been hooked and ride it everywhere. Such as to the school, the store, or sometimes just long rides because I enjoy it so much. I live in an apartment and go to a nearby college. I'm getting a bachelor's degree in software engineering, and after I get my bachelor's degree, I'm going to get a job as a software engineer and go part-time to get my master's degree. I have also learned how to advocate for myself, how to swim, how to eat healthy, and prepare a balanced meal. I have also been learning how to manage money wisely. Thank you, Your Honor." And this son also read a statement from one of his sisters. And we just didn't want to overwhelm you with statements. So hers is where she's thanking her parents for mostly teaching her about faith, because now she can have it in this time. And although how they were raised wasn't the best, it made her who she is today. Another lawyer read a statement on behalf of another daughter, 21-year-old Joy, who said, "I feel like 25 years is too long of a sentence. I believe with all my heart that our parents tried their best to raise all 13 of us, and they wanted to give us a good life. They believed everything they did was to protect us, if at all possible. I would really appreciate if the court would place our parents as close to the detention center they are in right now. So if we ever want to visit them, we can. Also, I want the 2-year restraining order lifted, and I want to be allowed to talk to both of my parents by phone." And I couldn't really find if the 2-year thing was granted, but I would assume it would have been if she specifically asked for it to be lifted, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, and she's a legal adult.
Yeah. Later, in a statement to the judge, David Turpin said, "My homeschooling and discipline had good intentions. I never intended for any harm to come to my children. I'm sorry if I've done anything to cause them harm. I love my children and believe my children love me. I hope the very best for my children in the future." Louise also spoke out, saying, "I'm sorry for everything I've done to hurt my children. I love my children so much. I look forward to the day I can see them, hug them, and tell them I'm sorry."
Was, like, reading the children's statements,
yeah,
was shocked at a lot of them saying that they still love their parents and forgive their parents and everything. And even though they're going on and living their independent lives, they're still conditioned in that way to love their parents and obey their parents. And I feel like that's still that conditioning, being in there and forgiving them, even if they should or shouldn't.
You know? And I don't think it's really for anybody else to decide, because I personally would be like, no, fuck them. Don't ever talk to them again. They don't deserve your attention. But if they want to forgive their parents, like,
for peace of mind.
Yeah, it shouldn't be anybody else's business, and people love making it about what they would do, you know? So just don't, like, track down these kids and fucking shit talk them, basically.
Right? Because that's been happening to them. Like, the YouTube channel.
So David and Louise Turpin were sentenced according to mandatory sentencing guidelines. So people were like, they got over sentenced, but technically, I guess this is mandatory. But they got life imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 25 years. And most experts believe that they will never receive parole due to the severity of their crimes. On April 26th, David was moved to Mule Creek State Prison, and on May 1st, Louise was moved to Central California Women's Facility.
Mule Creek State Prison is where the second Herbert week Mullen. In a row. Afterwards, visitors left balloons, notes, and flowers at the House of the Children. And the locals started referring to the children as the Magnificent 13.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
That is cute.
Knowing the house was unoccupied, thieves and vandals ransacked the house. The property was put up for auction in December of 2018, and it sold for $310,000 in February of 2019, which is about $40,000 below its appraised value. Afterwards, Louise's sister Teresa spoke out about her relationship with the children. She said that her relationship with them was virtually non-existent. She had only met the four oldest children once and would video chat with the other children, which slowly happened less and less frequently.
Yeah.
She said, I don't even know if you could say any of us had a relationship with the children. Never in a million years had we thought she was abusing the kids. She would just start making up excuses of why she couldn't video chat. She would say, David and I are just so busy with 13 kids. We'll get to it this weekend.
Yeah, always making up excuses.
Also, when Louise's father retired in 2012, he wanted to come visit the family, but Louise refused.
Yeah.
Her mother, Phyllis, died in February of 2016, and her father died 3 months later. Both parents requested that Louise come to visit them on their deathbeds, but again, she refused, and also didn't attend their funerals, but David did attend both.
Interesting.
Louise's aunt said, with the pictures they put on Facebook, you thought they were one big happy family. And David's parents said that they were surprised and shocked at the allegations against their son and daughter-in-law.
So, just one quick thing.
Yeah.
It is almost always a sign that abuse is happening if people move away from everyone in their family and they can isolate themselves.
Yeah, and disconnect.
Yeah. And I think that's, like, just a general thing to just, like, watch out for your friends and stuff like that, because their family was just like, oh, they just live in a different state now. They live all the way in California. It's too hard to meet with them. Life's busy, like, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like someone should have checked up on these kids.
Yeah.
And like, no, or been like, no, I'm coming. Like, I'm going to come visit. Like, I know it's really hard because no one wants to think that their, like, child is abusing their kids, but it just feels like if you haven't seen the children in a really, really long time, maybe check up on them.
Yeah, I did read that. I think it was right when they first moved to California, one of, like, Louise's cousins or nieces or something was in college nearby and stayed with them for a little bit.
Okay.
And she was like, you know, they were strict and the kids were quiet, but everything seemed pretty normal.
Interesting. Yeah, so they probably just did put on a great face to the outside world.
So Kent Ripley, who is a Las Vegas, Nevada based Elvis impersonator and the man who renewed the Turpin wedding vows, claimed to be stunned by the news of the children's imprisonment, stating that he felt he knew the family fairly well, and that the only way I could tell the difference in the children's ages was from their height, because the older girls looked young and all the boys looked the same. But he stated that the children looked clean and well-nourished on those occasions. Attorney Jack Osborne, who now represents the children, said about the kids, "They're not really looking back now. They're looking forward, working on school, working on their health, and working on learning and doing basic life skills. They're all working toward their own independence," he said. "They don't want their identity to people who they meet to be one of being a victim and having to relive this trauma every time they meet somebody. They want people to know them for who they are and what they're going to be doing." And an article came out that said, in current times, during like the coronavirus pandemic, they are all doing pretty well, being used to having to stay indoors and stuff. They said it's kind of weird, but they're used to it.
Yeah.
The older siblings are all living their lives independently, living in their own apartments, getting jobs, and going to school. And they're working on getting their general education degrees, being interested in engineering and teaching. And one of the girls has graduated college and is pursuing a career as a medical field technician.
Cool.
The six younger children have all been adopted, and appears that they are able to rebound a little better as they didn't suffer as many years of abuse and neglect.
Yeah. This case is, like, obviously a very extreme example, but this actually happens a lot more than I think people think.
Yeah.
There was a girl in Sarasota at the beginning of this school year who was discovered that she was being chained up to her bed when she went home at night and was, like, immediately locked in her room when she went home. And she was an only child, but it was still happening to her.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I feel like this happens probably a lot more than we think it does. After all of that, should I give you my Florida man story?
Please do.
Florida judge begs lawyers, get dressed for Zoom meetings. Dennis Bailey griped that one male lawyer appeared shirtless during a meeting while a female attorney stayed in bed.
Oh my God.
He published a letter to the Weston Bar Association saying, it is remarkable how many maternities? What is wrong with me today? Like, I cannot focus. How many attorneys appear inappropriately on camera? One male lawyer appeared shirtless, and one female attorney appeared still in bed, under the covers. Bailey isn't making any exceptions for lawyers lounging in the Florida sunshine either. Putting on a beach cover-up won't cover up your poolside in a bathing suit. He's just, like, mad.
He is. He wants them in a fucking suit.
Yeah. And since courthouses, this was posted, like, mid-April, so this is probably not as relevant. But since courthouses shut down on March 16th to help slow the coronavirus pandemic, Broward County's judicial system has held about 1,200 Zoom meetings involving some 14,000 participants. Wow. So they're just, like, doing trial hearings over video conference.
Yeah.
And he also said, often lawyers are not looking at their screens, but down at their files, their outlines and notes, or simply out the window, and cannot see the judges hollering, stop, stop, because an objection has been made and the audio stays with the witness rather than the judge.
So dramatic.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny because, like, me as a lawyer shows up still in bed undercover.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to come out today. Yeah. So that was it for me.
Yeah.
We hope that you guys stay safe in the upcoming week, but we hope that you guys could use this as a brief moment to get away from everything going on. We hope that you will check us out on social media.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher, wherever you can.
Yeah.
And check out our links below for any way that you can help
Yeah.
There'll be petitions and places you can donate and stuff like that.
Yeah. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.